You are listening to Believe, Strive, Achieve, Endurance Podcast with Diogo Custodio. If this is your first time listening, then thanks so much for coming. Get ready and enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Believe, Strive, Achieve, Endurance Podcast. My name is Diogo. Today, I have Philip Hatzis with some nice guests that I'm very, very curious to know who they are.
Great. Thanks, Diogo. Nice to hear from you again. So today's episode, I've got two guests, actually. So we've got two different people. Both of them are athletes in their own right, but both of them are also physios, and they've just started out doing their own physio clinics. They've got experience, through the NHS, the health service. They're sports-related physios, and they've kind of decided to take it out on their own. So I am really excited to talk to them and just find out a little bit about, obviously, the physio side of things, and I get stuck into that in a big way. But I'm also really interested in terms of how they bring that sporting perspective into the business, because obviously, you know, I love the old idea about setting up businesses and that part of it. Clearly, that's where Try Training Harder exists as well. So I'm interested to kind of hear and understand the dynamic of how it works for them as business owners and athletes, and how they found that leap into doing things on their own a little bit more to do their own thing. And as I said, I'm also definitely, I love speaking to physios, because I think you always learn so much about them. I'll definitely ask them about some of the classic areas or issues that athletes have, and triathletes in particular, and sort of what they're seeing as trends, as things change as well, which is always interesting to kind of hear what the physios have to say.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm thinking that I know a few physios who are related to sports and triathlon, and they have a very interesting perspective on coaching and training and on athletes. So I'm very, very interested to see what they have to say to us on this work.
Yeah, I mean, I used to always kind of make the half joke with, obviously, we have the partnership with the Bosworth Clinic based out here near Oxford. And I used to joke with Gordon, the kind of the head physio there, and say, you know, I'd break him and he'd, you know, I'd bend him and he'd mend him. And, you know, often that is the relationship that the coach and the physio has, and the coach has to acknowledge that most of the time the reason an athlete is going to a physio is because there's some chronic related injury. It's not necessarily an acute one. Sure, people fall off bikes, people trip over, sprain ankles, whatever it might be, that sort of thing happens, and ultimately that's not anything that the coach is responsible for directly. They might do, but 9 times out of 10, an acute injury like that is just bad luck. And so therefore, how you recover from that is reasonably straightforward. But in other instances, you know, the interactions I'm having with physios around athletes who've maybe picked up something which I've missed as a coach, it's you know, much more chronic, or something which is a repetitive strain or insidious onset of some sort of injury, that becomes far more intriguing, because that is definitely stuff which, as a coach, you learn the signature or that fingerprint that an athlete has, and how they apply themselves to their sport, and ultimately then what might be overloaded or compensating and causing sort of issues. And I think speaking to physios is always really interesting, because you can see their perspective of what they're seeing. And if you're working with an individual athlete, obviously you learn more about the athlete, but their perspective of what they're seeing as well in terms of coaching, and how they're picking up athletes who are breaking, are getting hurt, and maybe the things there that we can learn as coaches. So I always think the physios are worth talking to and finding out a little bit more. And, you know, they're reading stuff, they're learning stuff all the time about what's going on, what's the latest news, because there's always fads and suggestions around recovery and how to heal yourself and how to make yourself better. So sometimes that sort of thing can be very beneficial, just to kind of get their steer on what actually works and what doesn't.
So yeah, I'm very excited for this one, and looking forward to what they have to say to us. So make sure this is going to be a very good episode.
Thank you very much. Well, let's dive straight in with it.
Let's go.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Believe, Strive, Achieve Endurance podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to have with me Rose Fernando and Penny Koloff. And these two, both athletes, but also physiotherapists. And interestingly, especially from my perspective, they've also just started doing physio on their own. So they work within the NHS, but they've just left and started doing their own thing as well. So I'm really excited to have both Penny and Rose with me. For a little bit of further background, we've got Rose, who's actually coached by one of our coaches here within Try Training Harder. So she's also a coached athlete and an athlete in her own right, as well as obviously the physio side of things. And we've also got Penny, who's recently been promoted up to a Cat 1 cyclist as well, but not coached through Try Training Harder because she's gone to the dark side of purely cycling. But that's okay. We might persuade her by the end of today's episode that maybe there's an option to run off the back of the bike as she finishes. So Penny, Rose, welcome, and thank you very much for joining me today on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
So we'll start off with a few easy questions. I do want to talk about the physio business we both set up, but tell me a little bit about, I guess, your athletic careers and how that's intertwined, because you obviously do sport and you also do physiotherapy, so there must be a link in there. So Rose, how do you kind of see that sport and how did that kind of help you decide your career path?
Yeah, so I think I've always come from quite a sporty background. I didn't set out doing physio initially. I did some other bits beforehand and then realised errors of my ways and then came round to physio. Prior to being a coached athlete, I had quite a few injuries myself. So I think that kind of sparked a bit of more of an interest in wanting to know what the rehab process is and how to kind of come out the other side of that. I've always been a runner and then kind of dwelled into the running into the cycling side of things probably about 5 years ago as a bit of cross training and then did a little bit of swimming alongside that and then I came to TTH about 2 years ago and then that's when I got a lot more into the duathlon and that kind of sparked a little bit more of a desire to work purely with athletes rather than doing sort of purely the NHS side of things. So yeah, it's been a long process, but got here eventually.
Thank you. And Penny, again, same sort of questions yourself, sport and career have obviously been interlinked. So tell us how you got to where you are at the moment.
So I guess like most physios, when I was younger, I got injured. Went to physio myself, thought actually this is a field that really sparks my interest. Always knew I wanted to go down the MSK, musculoskeletal physio route, but did do all my rotations just to confirm that. Always had that key interest in sporting injuries. I've probably now been racing at this level for the last 3 years, but enjoyed. I did a little bit of time trials, those sorts of things when I was younger, but more focusing on the road and crit scene over the last few years. So I've developed from club level through to teams levels as well. So I've recently just gone solo, but prior to that, I was racing for a women's race team, LACA, and sort of targeting more of the national series this year, so all the National Road Race Series, but also then some of the Town Centre crits as well. I have done one triathlon in my life.
That's okay. You don't need to persuade us that it's we appreciate you as a cyclist as well as just as a multi-sport athlete. The fact you did one suggests maybe you decided that was enough and you wanted to move. Yeah, that's fine. So I think it's always interesting. I always find it really interesting speaking to physios because as a coach, there is an intricate relationship between the coach, the athlete, and the physio. And we work with someone locally here as well. And I used to kind of make the joke that I'll bend them and he can mend them sort of approach. And hopefully that's not the coaching ethos that definitely we have or I have. But I think from me as a coach, I find how physios look at the body is a really interesting way. I kind of almost see their kind of brains working quite differently when they look at how someone's moving compared to how a coach is moving, because coaches look at video analysis, they look at things and try and move their hands into the right place in swimming or something with running or anything like that. But perhaps Penny, you could just, when you see someone walking through your door in a clinic, let's probably go for more of the private side of things rather than the NHS, because that's going to be much more MSK or sport related. But how are you looking? What's the sort of things that you're looking for immediately as they just walk through the door?
So I guess you like that we're always assessing from that moment that you do walk in, how you hold yourself, you carry yourself. And actually we tend to start our assessment if we can before you've realized that we've been assessing you, because you'll do things naturally that when you're being watched you try to avoid, because you know that you're compensating those sorts of things. So it's just trying to see how you move functionally rather than necessarily when you're on the bike or you're running, those sorts of things, because they can give you like little insights into perhaps where your weaknesses are, because more often than not injuries come from that change in load, or if there's an area that's like imbalance or weakness. So it's just trying to identify those areas from the moment you walk in, really.
And Rose, how do you then, you're looking at something that just moved in, but how do you look at the body? I guess as an example, from a coaching perspective, I'm sort of almost looking at how the body is moving relative to what that limb has done to help them move. Is there an efficiency there? Is the hands, for example, in the swimming, does the hand go in and stay relatively still compared to the bottom of the pool? And from a coaching perspective, immediately I'm starting, like you guys, you kind of start assessing as soon as you see somebody, but I'm making those calls about, okay, well, I'm seeing that there's, say, slipping going on in that hand or something like that. So how do you look at someone's kind of body? I mean, I look at it probably maybe an efficiency perspective, and how are you looking at it from a physio's angle?
Yeah, so I think in physio, we do a lot of strength testing with our athletes because it's easy to get a compensatory pattern. So for example, you could get someone to do a squat and they look great, but actually then if you get them to do a single leg squat, you see that they're much stronger on one side than the other. So you kind of need to look at the whole picture and get them doing lots of different functional movements and think about the sport that they're doing and breaking that movement pattern down. Because typically, if you're weak somewhere, you're going to shift the load somewhere else. So you need to not just focus on that one area. If someone comes in with knee pain, well, you don't just assess the knee, you assess the ankle, you assess the hip, you might have a look at what the back's doing. So you need to take a step back and just look at the whole picture rather than really homing in on that one area.
Yeah, so talk us a little bit more then about that compensation mechanism, which you're talking about. I'm fairly confident I understand where you're going with that one, but for those people who maybe don't quite understand what you mean by compensation and the impact that then would have on, say, their sport, how does that work?
Yeah, so for example, quite often, so I think especially for runners, for example, your glutes are always the thing that gets demonized. There's that running joke that physios always tell people that they're weak through their glutes. But the reason we tell you that, they always say that. But there's a good reason, because if you think about it, your body is a kinetic chain. The whole thing's connected. So if you're weak through your hip, through your glute muscles, then you're going to overload potentially probably your knee. And then that's where you're more likely to get that pain. So you need to look at the whole kinetic chain and look at what each level is doing to make sure you're not shifting that load somewhere else. And that's what we mean when we talk about compensation. Is your glute weak, so actually your quads and your calves are having to do more work, or is your gastroc weak, and then that's load. So if your calf muscle's weak, then you're going to overload your Achilles, and you're more prone to those types of injuries.
I guess the way I'm sort of hearing what you're saying as well is if you ask anyone to go and run to kind of go and get a bus or anything, they're going to run. You know, they're going to get from A to B. That movement's going to happen regardless.
Yep.
And when you look at great athletes running, they'll run and they'll look fantastic and everything will be firing nicely and it all looks really good. But then you've got the Phoebe from Friends kind of runner who's still getting from A to B, but the way they're getting there isn't necessarily the most efficient, effective or kind of the right way, if you like, for that individual.
Absolutely.
And how do compensation mechanisms then appear? I'm going to ask the cyclist this question in cycling, because that's obviously a closed system, more or less. You know, your hands aren't moving unless you sit, take your bum off the saddle to stand. Realistically, you're sat on the saddle and the feet are locked in as well. So how does that compensation mechanism work in a situation where you are in a closed system?
So you're still loading one leg at one time, though. So that's why you tend to have your dual-sided power meters as well, so that you're looking at if there's any relative imbalance coming from there. You tend to have cyclists as well that tend to be either a little bit more glute dominant or quad dominant. So you might find someone that perhaps is a little bit more glute dominant, but they do a lot more riding in the saddle, their quads are going to fatigue quicker, perhaps then leading on to like patellofemoral issues, like knee pain issues, or knee tendinopathies, those sorts of things as well. So even though, yes, it's a very linear movement, very close chain, it is still, you're still single leg loading at one point in time. And that's why I predominantly as well would always rehab a cyclist single-legged rather than, so you avoid that bias, you avoid that compensating mechanism when they're rehabbing.
So that brings me on really nicely to a question that I wanted to pick up from, I guess, your website as she was looking at it, because I've befriended a few physios over the years, and the one thing which always comes out of it time and time again is that they hate the fact they have injured athletes coming to them. So on your website, you're talking a lot about prehab and actually kind of trying to prepare people for their sport rather than just fix them, because fixing them will inevitably be, I mean, Rose, you're a multi-sport athlete, and obviously Penny, you race as well yourself, but inevitably an injury happens with a timeline which is really short, try and get them ready to do this race which they have to do, and it's really important to them. And you know, you're fighting up against the clock as a physio, as a coach. You know, you're saying to physio, can we get things done quicker? The athlete's kind of pulling their hair out because the kind of big race which they've been planning for and training for many months is suddenly around the corner, and they now have this injury. So maybe we'll come back into some of the types of injuries and everything, but that prehab piece, how can you get that across to athletes? Because we try as coaches, but from your perspective as a physio, how can you manage that? How can you explain to them the importance of prehab?
I think one of the main things to think about when you're doing any kind of strength training is that it's never a quick fix, because muscle strengthening takes 4 to 6 weeks. So I think if you understand the concept that strength training is one of those things that just needs to bubble along in the background, and it doesn't need to be, especially for triathlon, it's kind of like your fourth discipline, isn't it? It's not the thing that you focus most of your time and your energy on, but even if you can do one strength session or conditioning session a week, your risk of injury is going to be substantially less. But also, if you look at all of the evidence, your economy in your sport, so how efficient you are in each of those disciplines, is much greater. Mm-hmm. So not only does it stop you from getting injured, but it actually makes you a better athlete in the long run. And I think sadly for a lot of athletes, they only realize the importance of prehab or strength work once they've been injured. And for a lot of people, that's then the kickstart that then they'll then never give up those exercises that you give them, because they love what they're doing do so much that they don't want to risk having time off with their sport. But for a lot of people who are potentially new to the sport and have already ramped up their training, they don't really see the importance of that. And I think listening from the experience of other athletes that have been through it is probably the only way that you're going to really learn that or realise how important it is.
Yeah, I guess no matter how hard you try, the expression, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And obviously when it realises it's thirsty, suddenly it will start.
Yeah.
Doing what it needs to. Really interesting point you, Michelle, raised, and I want to kind of reiterate it as well, as that 4 to 6 week period to actually change any sort of, make any meaningful change with strength training, because a lot of time athletes get injured and they assume it was the run that they did, you know, on Tuesday, or the bike ride where they were doing, but it, I mean, from what you're saying, it can be anything from the 4 to 6 weeks prior, which was compensating from then on. So I guess that question then comes back to you guys, in terms of, well, you know, if I want to go and see a physio to get prehab stuff so I'm preparing myself properly, like how frequent does that need to be? And I'm guessing there's an it depends it depends, but you know, it depends on what, and you know, how frequent should athletes think about seeing physios from a preventative manner? Go on, Penny.
That is a tough one, because you need to condition your body for your sport. So I would probably say like a lot of that strengthening is going to come from your coach as well. But maybe getting that physio's insight into if you do have any like niggles brewing, that's when we would want to have perhaps just a one-off assessment. We're not saying you need to come and see us every few weeks. That's definitely not the case. It would just be perhaps a one-off, make sure that you know how to self-manage. That's, I think, what we want to really get across, is we don't want to just make money from you. We want to help empower you as athletes and know how to prevent those injuries, to keep yourselves nice and strong and conditioned. So you don't need to be having regular physio if you're not injured.
And I think that's a massive misconception with physio, is a lot of people see physio as people who give you a massage and make your muscles feel a little bit better if you've overdone it in training. I don't get me wrong, some physios will do some manual therapy and that can be an element of it. But very much what we're trying to promote is that we can help to identify where the deficit is and give you bits that you can then go away and implement in your training with your coach long term. As athletes, when you compete at a high level, there's always that risk that you're going to get injured. You can't negate that completely, but by identifying the weaknesses and knowing where they are initially, you can do your most to prevent some of those common injuries from cropping up.
I think that then makes me sort of question a little bit more though around that frequency piece, because if you, like, I come and see Rose, come and see you, I've got a race coming up, it's really important that you're trying to do really well in this event, you're going to see me, it's like, okay, that's great, but you don't necessarily know where my normal is. So yeah. Oh, you know, you're really tight in your hamstrings, but actually that might be really good for me. So I think there's also a piece, yes, I know Penny talked about that kind of making money thing. I've always got a thing when a physio says buy 10 sessions you get one free, I'm always like, that's probably not the right physio to go to. So I agree with you completely that one, but there has to be an element of familiarity with someone, especially if you're wanting to perform at that high level, because a bit like a coach knowing how to just say something to an athlete at the right time, you know, the physio needs to have a feel for that, the body. You know, you need hands-on to be able to say, well, actually this is right. You talk about doing testing and, you know, seeing how people move, but you kind of need to understand where that person's normal is to see if it is just them or if it's something a bit more structural, something a bit more mechanical or biomechanical, depending on what's going on with the individual. So I guess there is still though an element of needing to know the athlete.
Yeah, and I would actually say that a large part of our assessment is done based on what the athlete tells us, not necessarily on our physical assessment. So we already have a really good idea about what might be going on with an athlete just from them explaining to us what training they've been doing, what symptoms they're feeling. And then we're already creating a hypothesis in our heads about what might be going on. And then we go on to do testing based on that. I think we're both massive believers in that athletes are very intuitive with their bodies. They know when their body is feeling different to the norm, and you know how your body is responding to the load and to the training that you're doing. So it can be really advantageous to have a physio that is your regular physio, so that if you have an issue, you go to see them. But that doesn't mean that you need to be seeing physio every fortnight and checking in. It just means that maybe you check in with them at the beginning of the season, you do a bit of an MOT about sort of where your body's at, how it's feeling. And then if you feel like there's a niggle coming on, you nip it in the bud and you go straight back to the physio rather than waiting till that becomes a full-blown issue that's stopping you from being able to train. And I think that's where them working with your coach is really important, and feeding back to each other about how your coaching is going and how your body is feeling, and your coach potentially stepping in and saying, right, okay, do you need to go and see the physio? Do you need a review? Is something brewing there?
Yeah, I think looking at that kind of frequency piece again, it's that familiarity with the body. And I think when I talk to athletes, and you know, we're speaking to athletes regularly, but one of the common things we get with a new athlete is not necessarily that awareness, which is particularly good. So again, I guess I'm now answering it with it depends where the athlete is. Like I know certain athletes will really know their body, and if they say something doesn't quite feel right or they're really tired or anything, there's sort of a degree of that being they are actually saying they're really tired or this is really bad. And again, that maybe needs to be led somewhere else. But sort of that education with the body
and learning how they should feel is something which I think sometimes the new athletes, or if you go into a new sport as well, you may not necessarily know quite. So for example, if Penny comes back to doing triathlon and she starts swimming and running again, she may be like, oh, you know, my arms really hurt. It's like, well, that's because you're a cyclist and you haven't had arms before. So exactly. So you need to start, you know, learning yourself and learning that body. And I guess what sort of things can you suggest to athletes to help them build that own self-awareness around their body so that that almost helps with that prehab in their own living room, I guess. They could do some of that in their own home.
Yeah, I think sometimes keeping a training diary can be really helpful with that, because you can just write down how your body's responding, or when you're feeding back on training peaks in those early sessions, just actually being a bit more detailed about how you're finding those sessions, how your body's feeling, and making sure that you're monitoring the load, the intensity, and kind of just trying to be a bit more intuitive and tapping into your body and how it's feeling and responding to those sessions that you're doing.
And feeding back straight away on a session, don't sit and think about it and then comment the next day. That initial response is your true feeling.
That's interesting. I definitely thinking back in my head, a few athletes who will kind of put a post up on the workout comment instead of saying, oh yeah, I've had this really sore knee, which really felt bad. It's been hurting me for the last week and a half. Well, you haven't mentioned that before, so that would have been helpful.
Yeah, and I think sometimes though athletes are scared to say it to their coaches, aren't they, because people don't want to be told not to train. But especially in those early days, actually, if you nip it in the bud really quickly, you'll probably miss a few days of training and then you'll be back on the bike or in the pool, whatever it is. But actually, if you sit and brew on it and then 10 days later it's this full-blown issue, then you're probably going to need 2 to 3 weeks off to just allow that inflammation to settle.
I'm going to ask you later on about timelines for different niggles and injuries. So it would be rude not to ask those questions, because those are the things which athletes always ask. I mean, as soon as they come in to see a physio, they're going to be sat there going to say, how long am I off kind of thing for? What does this mean? But before I do, I just wanted to pick up on something you said about listening to what the athlete says and you're already drawing a picture from that. And I'm thinking about when an athlete says something's sore or it hurts, kind of commonly the next question you would probably ask is, well, what kind of pain is it? So can you talk to us a little bit about what are the kinds of pains, and I guess what would be the things that you're then thinking as a physio by those pains? Because that I think could be really helpful for athletes just to listen and be like, actually that's interesting, this sort of pain maybe just means I need to rest a bit more and just take it a bit easier, but actually that's something I really need to pay attention to.
Yeah, so I think quite often if you have very specific pinpoint pain, it's coming from a very specific structure. So if someone comes in and they say, I've got pain at the front of my knee and it's not shifting, it's not moving anywhere, it just stays at the front of my knee, then we know it's more likely to be a patellar tendon, for example. Where if someone comes in with a bit more of a generalized pain, then that's when you need to do a little bit more exploring to think, is that a deficit? So for example, your hips are weak and then that's causing overload of your glutes or overload of your knee. And that's causing pain that's then transferring somewhere else. I think quite often, types of pain that we look at would be like your sharp shooting, pins and needles, numbness. That's obviously a bit more of a neurological pain that could be coming from your back. Whereas if someone's describing more of an aching pain or a stiffness, then we're thinking that's more of a tendon that's causing the symptoms. And then if someone's telling us that actually they're getting a lot of swelling with those symptoms, then we're thinking it's maybe more of like a ligament that's causing the issues.
Penny, do you have anything to add on to that list?
I guess it's how we get a lot from people's body language as well. So like we see a fair lot of presentations and hip impingement presentations in cyclists, and they typically put their hand on their hip and they go, it's pain here, like in a C shape. So it's those sorts of things as well. If they say, oh, it's like a pinchy type pain, like we can sometimes get those impingement pictures in the shoulder. It's just the language and not only the verbal language but their body language that comes with that as well.
And how would they know? I mean, I'm looking more at the runners, I guess, but Penny, you can answer this one definitely as well. you know, the classic kind of running injuries you're going to get, one of which includes something around shin splints, which is essentially a bony injury.
Yeah.
So how does someone then recognize that is actually more of a bony based injury or something a little bit more
Yeah,
sinister?
Bony injuries are a real interesting one. Stress fractures, you get a lot of warning signs, but a lot of people ignore them. So quite often, I mean, shin splints is a bit different because quite often shin splints is that really sharp pain that's very specific to that lower portion of the lower leg. And it comes on as soon as you're running. But if you're thinking about like a stress fracture more of your hip, or you can get sacral stress fractures more of the lower back, people get this like generalized aching sensation. And it tends to come on a little bit whilst they're running or whilst they're loading it, and then it will settle afterwards. But your sign that something is brewing into something a bit more serious would be if you're getting pain that's lingering for a longer period of time, or very specifically if you're getting pain at night that's waking you from your sleep. That's a sign that actually we're looking at something a little bit more down the stress fracture route, or you've got quite a lot of inflammation that's sitting in that structure that isn't then settling. And those are the times when you really need to think about backing off your training, because you're potentially going to cause issues that's going to take a lot longer to then settle.
And what would be those signs before you're kind of actually having, say, because stress fractures, obviously the actual fracture will happen, but there must be stuff prior to that, which an athlete is not necessarily choosing to ignore, but they are missing.
Yeah, and with bony stress injuries, it tends to be this generalized ache that you're getting, so they're quite easy to ignore. So if you've got it in your shin, it's a generalized aching that's radiating down the shin. It's not a high intensity pain. Some people rate it sort of 2-3 out of 10, and then it settles as soon as they stop doing that loading exercise. Or quite often for femoral stress fractures, the stress fractures of your hip, people feel like they've got quite a tight hip flexor. And they just think it's because they're doing a little bit more running than usual. So they do a lot of stretching, a lot of foam rolling, but it tends to not settle with doing those activities.
And Penny, I know you kind of specialise in hips areas as well. So kind of anything you'd add to that?
Yeah, it is a little bit difficult because they like stress fractures can initially present as something else. So it's kind of also just going with your gut feeling, and it's going back to what we were saying earlier, that you know your body best. If something doesn't quite feel right, that's when it's time to seek help or just preemptively offload, because we're looking for that mechanical element to it as well. So it's, yeah, like Rose said, if it's lingering, those sorts of things, that's when time to get a professional opinion, really.
And one thing I remember, I was not racing the UK, I was abroad, and I was sat there. I think I had a pre-race massage, because apparently that's what I needed to do. I'm less convinced by that nowadays, but that's that's what I chose I needed to have at the time. And I was chatting to the lady there, and they said that they'd noticed that there were more and more people having lower limb related injuries or niggles or tightness. And it was just after a sports running brand had brought out a new trainer, and everyone was kind of going towards that trainer, and they were all getting exactly the same type of injury presentations. And I was just wondering, I mean, obviously you're both in endurance sports, and I was just wondering if you were seeing anything at the moment that was more of a certain type of injury or a certain trend that you were seeing with more people going through different injuries, because obviously if there's that trend, we can avoid it. But yeah, was there anything like that which you're starting to see a little bit more of, or more frequency of certain things?
Not much I've seen recently. I'm getting a lot more crashes, I'm getting a lot more fractures.
Nothing. That's because people are spending more time on their indoor trainer and don't know how to go around corners.
Literally.
I mean, we joke about that, but we've seen a reduction in people's bike handling skills. And we actually started a few years ago, the first session that people come out with us to our training camps in the Algarve, it's a bike handling skills session. Part of that is to get everyone to know each other and have a bit of a laugh and check that the bikes aren't going to kind of lose bolts left, right and center. But another part of it is because more people are doing more indoor riding and not actually doing stuff outdoors, so they lose the skills. But sorry, I interrupted you.
From my point of view, I haven't seen anything, I haven't seen any trends or patterns.
I think from a running point of view, there's definitely been an increase in stress fractures. And I actually think, and there's emerging evidence on this, so don't hold this as gospel, but with carbon running shoes, because carbon running shoes tend to have a higher stack, as soon as a shoe is more built up into the heel, you shift the load higher up the chain. So you're loading much more through your knee and through your hip. And I think even within the elite world, we're definitely seeing a lot more femoral and sacral stress fractures in athletes. And the hypothesis at the moment is that could be related to footwear and the fact that a lot more people are wearing carbon running shoes.
And then I guess they're also choosing to wear those carbon running shoes on only a few runs because they want to keep them effective. And then on top of that, they choose the big runs because obviously they want to get the most out of them. So higher load, faster, more intense effort, and sort of asking their body some pretty big questions at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Interesting. That's the sort of stuff we love. Again, it's useful to know from a coaching perspective, and I guess for athletes to listen as well, that if they are looking at new shoes or anything, you talk about that anyway with normal shoes, but with carbon shoes, there is that element of I just want to protect them a little bit. Also, if there is a risk factor there, it makes sense to flag it.
And people go with extremes, don't they? Like, as you said, with normal running shoes, it's, if you're marathon training, don't buy a new pair of shoes 4 weeks before the marathon. You need to have worn them in. But people go with the opposite with the carbon running shoe, don't they? And then they'll have worn them for one or two. Yeah, exactly. And then they'll just go for it. So, yeah, it's interesting.
So talking back about the different types of injuries again, you kind of mentioned bony, ligament, tendon. You didn't really mention muscular, but are there any, so you know, you're an athlete, if someone comes in and say, I've got this thing going on, they're obviously then going to say, I want to get back to doing my race, which is coming up tomorrow. Can you help me and fix me kind of thing? But one of the conversations that as a coach, I'm really trying to have with them is like, first of all, milestones, but realistically, as you said about the strength and conditioning, it takes time to heal. So what are the general guidelines for athletes if they're coming in and you're like, oh, you know, you've got a tendon related injury, what sort of timeframes are people looking at just so they can get it in their head that, you know, this is actually something which you do need to think about for X number of weeks or months or whatever you guys might think?
Yeah, so tendons are a bit of a frustrating one, really, because there's no quick fix for a tendon. So tendons, by nature, by their physiology, tendons don't have a very good blood supply, so they're quite slow healing structures. So typically, when we get someone who's come in with a tendinopathy, they're rehabbing for about 3 to 6 months. That doesn't mean that they're not doing their sport and they're not training for that time, but it might mean they need to drop their intensity or their volume of their training to allow their tendon to recover and adapt to the additional load that we're going to give them with their strength work. Whereas someone who's got more of a muscular strain, like you said, we'd say more of like a 4 to 6 week. So muscles tend to rehab a little bit quicker, tendons tend to be quite slow.
Okay, and what about ligaments?
Ligaments are a difficult one. You get different grades of ligament.
The tendons are a difficult one and the ligaments also are a difficult one. That's
yeah. Tendons are definitely more difficult. They're definitely slower healing. So ligaments by contrast are very vascular structures. So that's why if you sprain your ankle or if you sprain your knee, it will balloon and it will swell quite quickly. And then the thing that limits you is the swelling. So the quicker you get the swelling down, if you do loads of ice, loads of ibuprofen, elevating it, those early phases to get the swelling down. If you can do that over the next week or so, you tend to then be able to load it and then get back. So we'd still go with that kind of 4 to 6 weeks. Whereas if you really struggle, if you keep trying to push through the pain and that you don't allow the swelling to settle, that's when you can kind of delay that healing process.
Okay. And any other types of injuries, I guess, which would be worth covering for athletes to know?
Your fractures, your bone healing times, they're probably the best bet. They're a nice standard 6 to 8 weeks, really.
Okay. What about anything neural?
Neural pain is difficult.
Yeah.
Once your nervous system is flared up, it can take, again, 3 to 6 months for that to settle. neural pain is one of those things that you should never go for that no pain, no gain theory, because it's a bit like scratching a mosquito bite. If you keep scratching it, you just delay the healing response. And if you keep pushing through pain, then your nervous system doesn't settle and it just lingers and lingers.
I guess the key message for athletes at that point then is, you know, we're talking about injury timelines there, and rehab for that. Prevention is definitely better than the cure. So those little niggles, those flare-ups, those things that you're aware of, if you, even if you think it is nothing, then that would be the time to be like, hey, can I just come and have a look at why this is just feeling a bit weird, or this doesn't quite feel right, and actually trying to address that earlier. Because a niggles recovery time, I think Penny said it was like a couple of days, you know, it could just be something you just take a couple of days out rather than, you know, months at a time, which is definitely not the way that anyone wants to kind of spend their season.
No.
So the two of you have recently set up Podium Physiotherapy. I guess I'm interested a little bit in that journey that you have taken from, but basically just being brave and just saying, I'm just going to go and do this. So kind of talk us through a little bit about how the plan originated and then kind of what you were kind of doing to kind of set it up.
Yeah, so it was a plan that came about just as a conversation in the office at work one day. We both have a passion for the sport that we do. And we both have a passion for rehabbing patients and wanting to get people back to their best potential. And that's where we get most of our enjoyment out of our job from, is getting people back on the podium, essentially, and performing to their best potential. So, yeah, it was just a conversation that came about in the office one day, and then we just went with it. I think we were both just quite passionate about it and just decided to take the leap.
And we're both still full-time NHS. Like, we do love working for the NHS as well, but we're great colleagues with great friends. Like, it's like, why not explore this together as an option as well?
Absolutely. You can preach into the choir here. So what would you describe as the podium that you're trying to get the athletes back to? You mentioned their podium, Rose. What do you mean by their podium?
I think comparison is a thief of joy, and you should never compare your own experiences and your own achievements to what other people are doing. So to get back on the podium is very much personal to what your goals are and what you're trying to achieve in your sport. So it's essentially just achieving the best that you can within the time that you've got to do your training and with the coach that you're working with, essentially.
And when you start working with someone, obviously, you know, if they're lucky enough to see you to the NHS, you've got all that experience you're bringing to them in an NHS basis. But what's the approach that you try and bring to them as a private client, or when you're working with someone, with an athlete, rather than kind of your normal everyday clinics within the NHS?
Do you want me to go? You've just got a lot more time with patients when you work privately. So the problem with the NHS is great, and the services that it provides are brilliant, but you are time limited. Whereas the benefit of working for yourself is you get to choose how long you spend with that client, dependent on the needs. So if you need to spend more time taking a history about their training, their volume, how the injury has come about, you've got the leisure and the pleasure of being able to do that. Whereas that can sometimes be a bit more challenging within the NHS. But you've also got a little bit more time to delve into what training they're doing, what rehab they need to be able to do. We both very much like athletes to give us feedback as to how they're getting on with the rehab programs that we've given them. So we'll quite often ask them to just email us with an update. And then if we need to tweak something, we've got the time to then tweak that and make an adaptation. Whereas we don't necessarily have that time in the NHS. Normally people need to book a follow-up appointment in X number of weeks to then speak to us again, whereas we're just a lot more accessible, I guess, to our private clients.
And Penny, can you tell me, I guess, a really good example which showcases sort of how you guys work like that, and like an athlete case study almost, of how you've taken someone and, you know, they've kind of come in with something and you've really fixed them, but you can sort of see how that journey that you're working with an athlete to that back to their podium has really been effective. I'd be really interested to hear how that looks for somebody.
So it is really on that first appointment, I guess, trying to gain what their goals are and their expectations, and then just really working together to make sure that along their progression with physio that they feel that they are making those stepping stones into achieving those goals. And it is very specific. Like for somebody, it might just be getting back out to a nice endurance ride with friends. To somebody else, it might be competing at those higher levels. So it is really person and individual specific, but it's just making sure you have that constant communication with whoever you're treating so that you're both on the same page and working towards their shared goal.
And I think as a coach, so I've got the coach's hat on, the bit which I think is really interesting when you're starting to work with a physio is that coach-physio relationship as well, because there's definitely three parties within the relationship. Obviously there's a physio and the athlete and the athlete and the coach, but how does that coach physio relationship work from your perspective as a physio? Because I know how it works as a coach. But yeah, how do you see it as a kind of, what can the coaches do differently or better or otherwise?
I guess there is a fair bit of crossover there. You've each got your own areas of expertise, and again it's just making sure that you communicate that really clearly. So like, what does the coach want to know to help set those training programs versus what does the physio need to know from the coach, what they're working towards? So it's just being really open and clear with that communication. And I know, like, my coach is always like, wants that feedback, wants to know how I'm getting on. So I've rehabbed from a hip hop back in November, and he just wanted that constant feedback, knowing what I needed to be doing from a rehab point of view, and then we filtered that in the training as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And how does that how does that communication piece, or how does that maybe differ or change than when you're speaking athlete to physio or physio to athlete, probably that way around? So how does that kind of communication change when you go physio to coach rather than the physio to athlete?
I think sometimes when you talk to a athlete, you soften it down a little bit. And I think you can be basically a bit more blunt in your approach when you talk to a coach and just say, look, this is the injury they've got. This is what they definitely can't do. This is what I'm happy for them to do. Whereas quite often, no one likes to be told what they can't do. You're always with a athlete, you want to remind them of what they can do and give that positive reinforcement rather than say, look, you've got this injury, you can't do X, Y, and Z. Whereas I think with a coach, you much more go down the route of keep coaching them, but these are the things I definitely don't want to be incorporated into their training at the moment because it's going to exacerbate their symptoms.
Fanny, would you add anything to that?
No, I think that's, yeah, definitely right. We're better at being a bit more honest and to the point with the coach, because nobody wants to hear, exactly like Rose said, nobody wants to hear what you can't do. It is all about that positive reinforcement.
I guess as a coach, I'd also throw back the other direction that it's very useful if you are an athlete listening to actually get the coach to listen, to speak to the physio, because not that we don't trust you, but sometimes the questions that a coach asks the physio might be slightly different to what the athlete asks. And I'm going to use my father as an example, who's not an athlete. Well, he pretends to be an athlete in golf, but he recently had a reasonably large operation after snapping a quadricep tendon. And he never asked if he could play golf, which was his main aim, in any of the physio consultations. So because he hadn't been told that he couldn't play golf, he assumed that he could. I ended up going to some of the sessions with the physio just to make sure I asked the right questions, that he was sometimes maybe not maliciously, but I think it was fairly he was not wanting to hear the answer he didn't want to hear, basically. And so again, as a coach, like, I really want to speak to the physio. So if you're an athlete listening, I think it's really good to be able to have that relationship between physio and coach, because they can ask those questions and actually you're going to get better rehab from that. You know, it might be, well, actually, they've got this race coming up. What about changing the program you suggested to make this? So you can actually kind of optimize
the return to play program as well, if there is a dialogue there, because there's two heads and a different perspective and a better overview of the training program of what you're trying to do, I think anyway as well. So that's also helpful.
Yeah, and I think that's what we like about Podium and working for ourselves, is we've got the time to be able to have those conversations with the coach. And sometimes the coach needs to be that reinforcing factor that says, no, do you remember physio said that we can't do that at the moment? Because as the athlete, you're always going to try and push your luck, aren't you? Because you just want to train. Whereas if you're able to talk to the coach and tell them what the plan is, then they can reinforce that plan as well.
Definitely. And so what's been the biggest learning experience or thing maybe which you didn't really realize in terms of that almost business development, that kind of setting yourself up on your own? What was that? Wow, I did not realize that this would be the way it was, either positive or negative from your perspective.
I thought it was actually going to be quite daunting to start off with. It seemed quite a big step from what we're doing, but actually we've kind of muddled through it together, and it's been, yeah, it's been actually quite fun and enjoyable working out where our different strengths lie within sorting everything out. So actually it's been a very positive outcome so far.
So I'm gonna wrap up the conversation hit there for that one, but I'm gonna ask you now the quick fire round. So basically just a few questions, split second thought about them. You have a bit more time one way or the other, because I'm gonna ask one of you the question, the other one can sit there thinking about the perfect answer, but I'll try and alternate it. I've got a few which I definitely want to ask you guys, but let's go. First up, the one we ask everyone is, what does Believe, Strive, Achieve mean to you? How has it applied to your experiences? Let's go with Rose, because she's the coached athlete with TTH, so she has that tagline.
I think it's just about having faith within yourself that you can achieve the goal that you've set out to do, and that you're not alone in achieving that.
Penny?
Yeah, I guess don't put yourself down. It's having that positive thought process. Always believe that you are going to achieve what you want to achieve. You're more likely to achieve it.
Okay. Is it acceptable to not wear socks on the bike, Penny?
Oh my God, please. And they can't be ankle socks either.
Rose, what about you?
I'm criminal for that. I will always wear ankle socks on the bike.
Oh, reduced our friendship.
Surprised you guys are allowed to even, you know, be in the same room together. That's appalling. Yeah, I'm the same, don't worry. Rose, are you a physio who is a do as I say but not as I do, or are you a do as I do and as I say?
Do as I do. I haven't always been that way, but the more I've progressed through my career, the more I've become do as I do.
And same question to yourself, Penny. Are you do as I do or do as I say?
Do as I say. Yeah.
Enough. This would be a bit of a more tricky one, but Penny, what's the measure or indicator from your perspective as a physio of another physio? So an athlete's going to sat there, they've just got a physio. Kind of how can they say whether or not the physio is actually kind of a good physio? Because I think we can all be honest and say there are good physios and there are great physios. So how does someone know if they are speaking to a great physio?
I guess it's that you're both on the same page, that you understand what you're trying to gain from that appointment. And as long as they don't tell you your body's out of the line and then that you need cupping, massage, acupuncture once a week for every few weeks, I think you're pretty safe.
That is Rose, yourself?
Yeah, I think a good physio is someone who will adapt to the program based on the consultation that you've had. So it's not you saying you've got hip pain and then saying, okay, well, you need 10 sessions of physio. It's you do a consultation, you find out what's going on, and then you make the plan moving forward from there based on that consultation.
And then I guess back to you then, what does good coaching look like to you?
A good coach is someone who will listen and adapt to your program based on the feedback that you're giving, and someone that you work in collaboration with. It's not someone who just tells you what to do and you get on with it.
And Penny, what does good coaching look like to you?
Someone that you trust and you trust their opinion, and that you can be completely open with as well, because you put your body through an awful lot when you're training. You need to be able to tell them exactly how you're feeling.
And Penny, what's your favourite race or bucket list event that you'd love to do?
Oh, my favourite race is Guildford Town Centre Crit. Bucket list. Oh, I don't know. Oh, I don't actually have one. I think I would be actually to complete all of the Nat A Crit series. I've only done the Nat A Road series. I'd be to do the Crit series.
Nice. And Rose, yourself, what's your favourite race or bucket list event?
I think favourite race, I'd have to be purist and just say a park run. Just something about park run and the community that is just lovely. Bucket list would be to do one of the major marathons. So Boston would be quite cool. Potentially London, but I've heard mixed reviews.
Fair enough. And then I'm going to ask slightly different questions than the last one. Rose, would you rather win at Kona or win an Olympic gold medal?
Win an Olympic gold medal.
Okay. And then same question to you, Penny, but if it would be an Olympic gold medal in cycling, would you rather it be on the road or in the track?
Road.
There you go. Definitely. Well, thank you both very much for your time today. It would be rude not to mention that we'll put the link to your website, Podium Physiotherapy, in the show notes. So anyone who wants to go and check out Rose and Penny and see what they're up to, you can go over there. There's a full range of different services available, from virtual consultations to face-to-face stuff. You're based outside the west of London, so really accessible for a lot of people within the country. But obviously the virtual options mean it's accessible to anybody. If you're a tri-training harder coached athlete, you're kind enough to offer slight discounts to our coached athletes. Hopefully we're not bending too many of them, so you have to mend too many of them. But obviously, again, if there's that niggle or something, which is you're not quite sure, that virtual consultation is probably perfect, just to be like, hey, this is what's going on. Am I being silly, or do I need to actually come and see somebody? And you can also catch up with them on Instagram as well. But thank you both so much for joining me and kind of shedding some light on physio, that coach athlete, coach physio athlete relationship, and how that all works. There's some really great stuff in there. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Well, Philip, this was a very interesting conversation, as usual. I think for myself, it's always interesting to listen to physiotherapists talking about sports, especially when they are related to it. Which is the case of our two guests. But what was your intake from this one?
Yeah, so I think it's a really interesting conversation whenever you have these chats with experts in their field. And, you know, as a coach, you interact with these experts all the time. But the bit which really struck me was one of the first points they made, which was when you come into that door, they're already assessing you, kind of how you're walking, how you're holding yourself. They're already picking things up. And that's kind of true with what we do with a training session. You know, we talk to an athlete and how are things going, and there's a lot of stuff that we can glean from those early conversations before you ever see someone swim, bike, run. You know, they even tell you what the injury is. There's already stuff which is starting to potentially guide them to what the answer might be. So I think that was kind of a really interesting perception or insight that I think a lot of people may not have realized.
I actually think physiotherapists and coaches are not that different. Of course, there are different levels of knowledge of the body. But for me, it's always good to listen to a good physiotherapist, because the way they look to a human body, especially if it's an athlete, is always different from a normal physiotherapist, I would say. And they can see how everything is connected, or sometimes is not connected at all. And we do the same kind of stuff with our athletes. So we always try to see what's the weakest part that we can work on in order to improve their abilities. And that was also some interesting thoughts from them when they take a look on the athletes and to see what is working, what is not working, why is not working, how can we make it work. That was quite interesting.
Yeah, and it was definitely one of the points, which was sort of a very short one that Rose sort of picked up around, you know, what is that difference between a good and a great physio? And it was about having a process which individualizes the treatment, as opposed to having a treatment which generalizes to everybody. And so the way they look at someone and what they say they do, you know, that she said, if you've got someone who's going to go straight in there and just do cupping, or if you've got someone who goes in there and they're going to do this, you know, if that's what they do, or they're just doing massage, then they're probably not actually answering the question that the body is asking. And I thought that was really interesting, because it does. It's all about that ability to have a process, which means you can be very, very individualized in the approach that you have with the athlete in front of you. And that was, as you say, it was very clear that the way they look at the body and what they're looking for and what they see is the difference, or the kind of key difference between sort of a good or a great physio.
Do you also think that's because they both are endurance athletes, they have a different view on the athletes than those who are not sports people at all have?
I think the insight that provides them is the athlete's mind a lot more. So, you know, they're able to then empathize a lot more with an athlete about what they could do. So I think with any of the physios like that, you know, if they've been there, if they've been an athlete themselves, if they know what it's like, be that endurance or otherwise, you know, they know the feelings that the athlete's going to go through, and they probably can preempt what the questions are that the athlete wants to know the answer to before they ask them. It's like, right, you can't go back to your sport now because you need to clear it. You know, this clearance will get you to the next phase or whatever it might be, or it's going to be this many days until we get you back into doing something. Or that's not a problem, just be careful here and you're fine. So I think that can offer a lot of insight into how they necessarily respond or predict treatment. And I think the other thing which really helps, especially with athletes, both of them, you know, swimming and cycling and running athletes predominantly, you know, they're going to see what's going on with a lot of the current trainings and fads and ideas which is happening, and they can start actually understanding both why maybe injuries are happening a little bit more, because they understand the training process, they understand what's being said, and they can also identify and understand what a return to training might look like. So, for example, you know, if you've got a physio who understands the swimming cycle, they'll say, "Oh, you know, you've got a knee injury. That's fine." I remember having this conversation a while ago with a different physio, but you know, the physio was like, "Yeah, you've got this this tendonitis on the knee, so kind of tight quads essentially." And instead of saying, "Yeah, go swimming," it was, "Yeah, go swimming, but you need to have a pool boy, because that kick as you go down is going to aggravate the knee and the tendon and the knee." And so it's being able to understand, really understand the movements that are involved in the sport, which I think really, really helps. And kind of where you can maybe do a little bit more than what you would have normally said because of the fact that you understand the movement of the sport. And that I think can be really, really valuable as well.
Yeah, I agree. As I said before, he's the same as a good coach. He always knows what's happening in the body. I think here also one of the key things we need to take a look at is the prevention, is not just the treatment. And I know that we are trying hard. We try to prevent all these kind of situations. So S&C is always a big part in our training plans, or at least we try to. Even when it's hard for the athletes to do swim, bike, and run, and then S&C. But I think that's making a gym session, or even if at least once a week would be good. Although knowing that sometimes it's hard for us to plan that, or for the athletes to do that. But the prevention here is key. And once again, it's connecting every single muscle in the body to make sure that the machine is working properly. It's the same as a car. If you have the engine working properly, if the wheels are turning in a good direction, the human body is going to be the same. So if everything is working according to what they should be, then we're going to have some success on that.
And it's also about being able to predict when things aren't quite in phase. You know, using that car analogy, if I jump in a car and I kind of drive it, you know, I'll know it's okay. But if you've got someone like a Lewis Hamilton or Max Verstappen, it's going to even out both sets of fans, because I know they're both polarizing. You know, if you've got one of those people in the car, they'll tell you what's actually wrong, or they'll pick up those little things which are going not quite right. And I think that's where athletes could really do a lot more with understanding their own bodies and their tells, because the body is really kind of telling you a lot about what's going on, how things are reacting, what's causing issues, what could be something down the line. You know, it might be tightness, it might be a little bit of awareness, or it doesn't matter. But a lot of time people ignore those because they're focusing on doing a session or completing a workout. And if you can start listening to what your body is saying and adapting things accordingly, I think that's a really, really, really big move that any athlete can take and be like, that's actually something I can do. And I wasn't really aware that was my body was saying, but I'm listening to it now. And I think that ability to know yourself and then pick up those early warnings of something which isn't quite right, it's not quite out of phase. You know, before, using a car analogy, the wheels come off. You realize that there's a bit of a wobble and the bolt must be loose. So you don't try and find it, and you find before there's actually a real incident. And, you know, that actually ties in really nicely with the point around kind of going to see a physio regularly as well, because on the one side, there's your perception of how things are going. But also, if you've got someone who you know and you trust and you can see relatively regularly, then you can get them to also understand your body and the way your body moves and what your normals are. So they can start saying, yeah, you're actually, you know, you're absolutely fine. You're going well. This is looking good. Or they can say, actually, this is a bit different to the last time we saw you, and this is a bit of an outlier. So let's address that. So it allows a second opinion, if you like, and a bit of objectivity on your body, which you might not have otherwise got. You can get a similar thing, I guess, with people you're living with or partners. And you know, if you become all moody and tired and like, oh, you're really grumpy, they'll probably pick it up as well. But in terms of your body and how things are moving, you know, having that physio hands-on ability to see how you move, what your normals are, I think that's really, really useful. And I know both Rose and Penny were really careful to try and make sure that they didn't sort of say, oh yeah, you need to come to us all the time, because they don't really believe that. They really believe about the fact that, you know, you can just do do it every now and then regularly. But they were also quite keen to say they would love to be working with people where they're actually fixed. They're not just repairing everybody all the time. They've got a fixed person, they're making them better, and trying to see where the next thing is to make a gain is. So I think that's, as you say, a really good point around that preventative side of things. And, again, understanding there's different types of pain. What hurts? Well, this is what hurts, and this is how it hurts. And the different ways you describe a pain can actually identify to someone who understands it what that is potentially going to be. And then the subsequent immediate action and the subsequent, ongoing recovery that you need to do in order to avoid that pain from being something which is a lot longer term or takes longer to recover from. So I think, again, athletes would do really well just to rewind back and listen to kind of what those different types of pains were and the recovery periods for them. And again, what the key thing was for the athletes to sort of pick up in terms of those niggles, because that will be the prevention for them. Because athletes are going to wear themselves down. You know, you can't drive a car without wearing it down. From the tires on the road, they're going to wear down. So it's the same with your body. Things are going to get a little bit worn. So you need to make sure you keep on top of everything. Because otherwise, then you can have some bigger problems.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. And to be honest with you, I could listen to physiotherapists talking about the human body and the movement in the sports all day. And you can clearly see that they know what they're doing. So that was a very good interview. So thank you for that. And we're going to have some more conversation about this in the future for sure, because I think this is something that we still need to explore more and to dig deeper. I'm pretty sure that the athletes nowadays are more aware of their bodies than they used to be before. I would say that before they just did the main stuff and they didn't care at all for the S&C, but now people are realizing the benefits of it. Especially if you are an age group athlete and you have to sit all day working, you need to work on your glutes, on your hips, on your core muscles. Just make sure that everything is going to be strong enough to be able to support and to handle the swim, bike, and run, or just a run, or just a bike that you are doing. So I think this is a very important. It's not the fourth discipline of triathlon, but it's maybe the fifth or the sixth. We have so many right now.
There are so many disciplines on this pre-sport thing. Yeah, exactly. And they've got some really good stuff. If you head over to their Instagram account and look at some of the stuff they're putting out there on injury rehab and sort of pains and everything, you can go there and learn again and pick up some of the information from them, or head over to their website, where I think they're hosting some of the articles as well. So they're building up that bank of information to help athletes learn about themselves, which is great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Diogo. Catch you later.
Bye-bye.
The Believe, Strive, Achieve podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at trytraininghardware.com. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Try Training Harder. Thanks for listening.